Sports Radio 1290, CFRW, Winnipeg.
I don't believe what I just saw.
A division of Bell Media.
ESPN Radio.
Sports Radio 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of in-depth analysis, insight, and opinion into Canada's game. Now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba, and for all those joining us live this morning at SportsRadio1290.com, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're with you for the next 3 hours, bringing you all the latest news from the week that was in the hockey world, and as well the best interviews that we could get our hands on coming up on the program this morning. From HockeyWriters.com and Forbes, Mike Colligan will be joining us at 9:30. He covers the Penguins. He'll be talking about the Penguins with us. Coming up at 10:30 this morning, James Gordon from the Ottawa Citizen. Coming up at 11 a.m., James Myrtle from the Globe and Mail. Two Jameses. Maybe we should call him the Two Jameses?
We can do that, Drew.
Okay, thanks. And at the final guest today at 11:30 this morning, Chip Alexander from the Rally News and Observer. My name is Drew Mandel. I'm the host of this program, joined in studio to the left of me, Ezra Ginsberg, to my far left, Richard Pollock, to my right, Michael Remus, and getting us on and off the air, producer Tim joins us. Gentlemen, good morning.
Hey now, Drew.
Morning, Drew. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Izzy. How about yourself?
Very good, very good.
Yeah? You're not wearing sweats today?
Nope. I'm wearing ripped jeans instead.
That was last Saturday because we did this show, but then we did a 4-hour baseball draft after.
That's right.
Followed by a 5.5-hour baseball draft on the Sunday.
That's right. It was a good week for baseball drafts.
Great
last
time.
Yeah. Are we doing any drafts this weekend?
I don't think so.
No? We're just going to be drafting some breakfast? Is that what we're doing?
I'm planning on drafting the
feta omelet first overall.
Drew, I'm telling you right now, unless you've been in a 4 or 5 hour baseball draft before, you can't explain to someone what's involved because there's so many players. It's so much different than your traditional hockey pool, your traditional football pool.
It is.
It's unbelievable. By the time you're past the first 15 rounds, you're analyzing guys that have had 6 homers and 24 RBIs. It's ridiculous, but lots of fun. 3 days into the baseball season, go Expos.
Good line, Ezzy. Nicely done there, Ezzy. Good line there. Okay, let's before we get on with the real gist of the show, let's recap what happened last night in the NHL, and let's look forward to today, the second last Saturday of the regular season.
Crazy, isn't it?
I know. Well, it is April. it might be time to start wrapping up the regular season there. Well, it is April. That's all I'm saying. I maintain the season goes too long.
I like it.
I know you like it. But you'd be fine with hockey 12 months a year.
I would.
Exactly.
You guys remember when there was a season with 84 games?
Yeah.
What year was that?
84?
No.
Wasn't
84 like the late... Remember they...
Yeah, what is the year?
It was 84 games, not 84.
Well, Richie, I don't know the answer.
You don't know the answer? You're just throwing out questions?
Wasn't there a season in the late 90s that had 84 games for some reason?
I don't think it was then. I think it was...
I don't know. We'll find out.
They played 84 games in 92, 93, 93, 94.
Okay, there you go.
There you go.
Why was that? Why did they add 2 games for 2 years and decide that was too much?
I forget there was a reasoning behind it.
John Ziegler's on the line.
Yeah, I'll look into it.
I think he's actually washing the floors here, so we can get our hands on him.
The number of teams they wanted to even out the amount of teams.
Anyways, last night in the NHL, quiet night. 4 games on the ice last night. In New Jersey, the Devils defeated the Philadelphia Flyers 4-2 last night. Patrick Elias with a hat trick.
Yep.
Ezzy, are your Devils...
Are they going to make the playoffs?
Yeah. It's funny. Remember 2 months ago I said, Drew, they're mathematically still in it. It's funny, they interviewed Elias after the game and he said, we're mathematically still in it. They're obviously out of it, but great. Good
but
for
mathematically
good for them.
Still in it.
Good for them. Philly, that's Philly's second loss in a row.
Philly's really missing Pronger right now, and there was news this week that he's not going to be back until the playoffs, which is fine, so long as he's back for the playoffs, because this team... everybody slots in correctly when you have the Flyers, like Mezeros and these guys, they slot into the amount of ice time that the coach is really comfortable with. But without Chris Pronger, and evidenced by Edmonton and Anaheim after he left.
Yeah.
This guy is as good as it gets in terms of the back end, so you need him to compete. You don't need him, you can't have him come back in the second round. You need him to get to the second round.
That's right. You need him in the first round.
Especially with their goaltending, Drew.
Yeah. He has to, which has been historically shaky, and it's continuing that way.
Well, and you can't predict it, right? But you have a youngster in net. Who knows how he's going to react? Then you have Brian Boucher, who's terrible.
Yeah.
Now, if your team's good enough up front, which it really is with really six pretty, darn good defenseman, and a really, 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 really good forward group. You should be okay, and good coach.
How many wheelies was that?
Well, think about, honestly, though, Drew, you think about that offensive group and just the depth that they have. You know, they're up the middle, the guys that they can, four centers who can play center if they wanted them all to play center, Richards, Carter, Giroux, Briere. Yeah, that's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Those are arguably all number one centers.
Oh, yeah.
On the same team. So it's their offensive depth is truly amazing because you're talking about, you know, still some really good players on the wing there, too.
It's stunning able to assemble that level of talent in a salary cap era.
Right, and the interesting part, Drew, is the guys like Richards and guys like Carter, I mean, they're not, I mean, Richards signed long-term. They're both signed long-term.
Right.
Richards is signed at a reasonable cap hit. Carter just signed at under six. Carter's cap hit moving forward is going to be 5.2.
You kidding me?
And Richard's cap it moving forward, I believe, is 5.7. Both under six, Drew.
Which are very reasonable. Very reasonable.
I'm not trying to diminish what the loss of Pronger means.
Stop trying to diminish the loss of Pronger, Ezzy.
But I think, though, that if they end up playing, especially the Sabres, which is very possible, or the Hurricanes.
Sabres have leapfrogged into seventh right now.
I think that they could still easily get out of the first round without Pronger.
I disagree.
Okay.
I mean, that argument's fair. If they play the Rangers, though, with their puck moving,
they should avoid them, though.
Yeah, you don't want to play the Rangers. I'd rather play Buffalo.
Yeah.
Anyways,
we'll continue on with last night. In Columbus last night, the Blue Jackets are just whiling away the rest of the season as usual.
They couldn't help out the Flames last night. All the Flames needed was a little bit of help.
Yeah. They tried. It was another one of those classic three-point games. The Blackhawks ended up beating the Blue Jackets 4-3 in a shootout. Which really does hurt the chances of the Calgary Flames, who, you know, they took care of their business. They were in St. Louis, and they were down going into the third period, mm-hmm. but they scored two third period goals just on the back of Jerome Iginla, his 1,000th NHL point.
He's unbelievable.
Yeah, and the Flames beat the Blues 3-2 last night.
You know, winning.
You could almost see, and I'm not sure if you guys watched the whole game or just the third or the highlights, but I watched that whole game yesterday. And you could see, especially towards the end of the game, Jerome Iginla had that look in his eyes, and mm-hmm. you knew that he was taking control of the game. Yep. And him and Tange, I mean, he's worked so well with Tange. I mean, it's going to be tough for Tange's, you know, up for contract, Richie.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they don't have a lot of money, and you have to think his salary is going to go up to $5 million, maybe. Maybe not $5 million, but $4 million.
He works well there. I mean, it's one of those situations was also a good fit, though. Tange works well there. Didn't really work well in Montreal and Tampa Bay for whatever reason. So maybe it's a fit that he takes lots of money and then, you know, they give him more term. Whatever it may be, he's really fit in well there. I mean, Calgary's direction is up for debate. But, you know, Drew, you see those games and, you know, you hear the term winner, right?
Yeah.
And you hear that term, you know, Mark Messier is a winner. He's a winner. But there are also winners on teams that don't necessarily win. I mean, Jerome Iginla likely won't win a Stanley Cup.
He'll have to leave Calgary. Very surprising at this point in his career for Calgary.
But he's won a World Cup, two Olympic gold medals, been a huge part of those teams, especially in the deciding games, hence the pass to Crosby, and of course his dominating performance with Iginla and with Sakic and Gagne in 2002, winning the 2004 World Cup. Iginla is a winner, and if you may not win the Stanley Cup, doesn't mean you're not a winner.
It's going to be an interesting thing, you know, as far as what Iginla, the Flames decide to do with Iginla, because if they do decide
he's
to move him,
anywhere.
It would be because of his desire to win a Stanley Cup, but the thing is, I'm pretty sure he wants to finish his, he's probably got 4 or 5 years left still, so.
Maybe in his last year of his career, if he still hasn't won the Cup and the Flames aren't going anywhere. He'd do a Ray Bourque. Matt Sundin never won a Cup. A Ray Bourque and you go to Colorado and you win the Cup.
I mean, Matt Sundin's still trying to make it from blue line to blue line right now in that Vancouver team.
Actually, I think he went skiing instead.
Yeah.
The final game last night in Phoenix, speaking of Colorado, the Colorado Avalanche went into Phoenix and they beat the Coyotes 4-3 in a shootout last night. Phoenix is going to be, they're in fourth spot still in the Western Conference.
I'll tell you this, so Drew, that's a bad point to give up there. Colorado is dreadful in their last 10, they're 3-7. And
Phoenix should win that game.
They're minus 56 in terms of goal differential. They're an absolutely horrendous team. You're Phoenix, you're playing for home ice advantage. Not that that actually matters. But you know what I mean? But you're playing for home ice advantage. Forget the fact that there's no fans. Last change, face-off advantage, you know, all those things that come with that. And then you have LA and Nashville breathing down your throat, and you have Anaheim only 3 points back with two games in hand. Phoenix, by giving up away that point, may very well have squandered home ice advantage. And that should not be under, that the importance of that cannot be understated.
I'll tell you what, the one, I mean,
if you can't give up a point to Colorado.
No.
I mean, they are a joke right now.
Colorado is. Yeah. Absolutely. You're absolutely right.
Remus was for sure cutting that clip right there.
Yeah. But you're absolutely right that Colorado is a joke, and you can't give up that point. And it's going to cost Phoenix. It might cost them home ice advantage.
And now,
if you want to play any team in the Western Conference right now, if you're going to be in the top four, you want to play the Los Angeles with all their injuries, and we'll talk about that.
You want to play Phoenix or LA. Those are the two weakest teams.
You got it, dude.
Those are the two weakest teams as far as I'm concerned.
That's right. So, I mean, if you're Phoenix and that point ends up costing you, you might end up playing San Jose or Detroit, and they can't beat San Jose or Detroit.
Or you're just playing Anaheim or Nashville or LA, but in those cities first.
That's right.
Defensive, you know, Nashville's a defensive team. First of all, I don't know how anybody's going to handle, you know, if Phoenix plays against Anaheim with that line.
No,
Phoenix's defensive defensemen aren't that good.
No,
I'm not saying Phoenix is going to beat Detroit, but people forget Phoenix took Detroit to 7 games last year in the first round
and lost 8-0 in the seventh game. And that was not as good of a Detroit team as it is this year.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter. Phoenix can only beat one team in the Western Conference.
Why? They're so good with Mike Modano?
They're
healthy.
Why is Detroit got better?
Because they're healthy. They're healthy.
They were pretty healthy last year.
No, they weren't.
Who did they have missing, Drew?
Well, Franz had missed the majority of the season. They had a ton of injuries last year, and they came back.
Franzen, it's one injury.
Guys, we'll talk about the playoff races a little later on. Let's just look forward. Let's look ahead to tonight in the NHL. Let's just do that first, and then we can go back and look at the playoff races.
And you're arguing that Phoenix is better. I mean, they're worse.
Oh, Phoenix has no chance against Detroit. None.
No, I'm just
none
I'm,
whatsoever.
I'm just saying that Phoenix took Detroit to 7 games. So let me
ask you this. Okay, last year when you're Phoenix, quickly, Drew, I'll go quick.
Yeah, okay.
When you're Phoenix and you have your best defensive defenseman, Zdeněk Mihajlík, you can't argue it. You lose him. Who is he replaced with?
Nobody. Radoslav Klesla.
Who are you putting up against?
Rusty Klesla.
Who are you putting up against Datsyuk now?
You're not. You can't. Canterbury. They have no chance. They don't match up well.
They would have the puck 45% of the game at the most, and they would have trouble.
Few big games today in the NHL. Afternoon battle in Nashville. Detroit will play at Nashville. Huge game for Nashville. Just a big test of Nashville as well. So that's a big game. Dallas at Los Angeles, also a big game. Dallas on the cusp of the playoffs there. They need to just really, all they can do is win.
At this point, Dallas is 5 points back. With 6 games remaining. Now, they have a game on hand on Chicago. Chicago has a difficult schedule, so if Anaheim Dallas were to win today, they'd be 89 points. They'd be at 89 points, and they'd have 5 games. So they'd be tied with Calgary, 3 points back with equal games to go. They'd have a chance.
Yeah. In the race for the final spot in the Eastern Conference, the Hurricanes are playing
Eastern
at the
Conference.
The Hurricanes are playing at the Islanders. We'll talk to Chip Alexander from the Rally News and Observer later on in the show. He's in New York. Buffalo is at Washington. That's a game that Buffalo needs. They've actually leapfrogged the Rangers into seventh right now.
Andrew Washington still can get first in the East.
They're only a point behind Philly.
Nobody's talking about that. Philly is only 1 point up.
Leopold injury, though.
Yeah, Leopold injury. We'll talk about that coming up in our injury segment.
You guys know that yesterday when I was, last week, Drew, I know we got to get quickly into a break here. When I was talking about Jordan Leopold, he was injured the night before. Remember when I was talking about
it?
Yeah,
but come out until the next
that's
day
huge.
That he was out
that's
in depth.
That's huge. With Miller, that's bad.
And what I call the game of the night, I think, Anaheim at San Jose. It's going to be a war. Just a great Western Conference battle, I think.
That's going to be, you know what, right now?
Yeah.
Corey Perry?
Yeah.
MVP?
I think I'd still vote for the Sedin, but...
Which Sedin, though, Drew?
Well, that's a good question.
I would vote for Corey Perry over the Sedin.
Really?
Yeah.
Well,
Thomas.
No, not Tim Thomas. No.
Well, that's my. If I had a vote, I would vote for Tim Thomas. Well, you can't argue with my vote.
Watch me.
You
don't have a vote.
You don't have a vote, and watch me do it.
Tim Thomas gets no credit for.
Don't
being
tell
so.
Me that I can't vote against. I can't
we talked about it on
the
show many times. We talked about this for years on this show.
Yeah.
Who. Is matching up against that top line.
You can't. It's very difficult.
There's no defense pairing, I think, in the NHL that can match up against that line.
No. Chris Pronger is the only guy. And that's not until the Stanley Cup Finals.
He's only one guy, though. Yeah. You can't handle three guys, you know?
Let's go to break. When we come back, NHL News and Notes. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290.
Where did Remus go?
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on Sports Radio 1290. Brought to you in part by Superlube Auto Centers. They didn't make the car you drive. They make the car you drive, drive forever.
Nine 9:15 in the morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Man, I love Sade.
You love what?
Sade. the singer, Sade.
Isn't it Sade?
No, it's Sade.
Is there a Sha?
Was that Sade?
No, but I'm just saying I love her.
Was it the Beatles?
Yeah.
That's great.
That's why I don't understand what...
No, that wasn't the Beatles.
Yes, it was.
Come together.
That was the Beatles?
Did you think it was Sade?
No, I didn't think it was the Beatles.
Why did you bring up Sade or Sade?
Was that Aerosmith?
That wasn't Aerosmith.
No.
It's Come Together by the Beatles.
Cool.
If Drew knows, it might be obvious.
That was really bizarre, is it even for you?
Hey, I'm not wearing sweatpants again in the studio.
You're not wearing any pants.
You said I couldn't wear the sweatpants, so now I'm wearing jeans, and, you know, you should give me a little bit more respect.
You didn't know that was the Beatles!
Winning. I know.
Throw me a freaking bone here.
Welcome back to the program. It's time for NHL News and Notes.
NHL News and Notes.
Starting Pittsburgh. Sidney Crosby. I mean, breaking news. Sidney Crosby breathes today. You know, he's returned to practice or whatever version of practice he's currently in.
Practice.
Does anybody care about the story until he's back being healthy and playing for the Pittsburgh Penguins?
Of course we care. I think it's just great that Sidney Crosby is actually answering these questions honestly, and he keeps saying the same thing. He could be avoiding reporters, but he doesn't know when he's coming back, if he is coming back at all. And of course we care because it affects how the playoffs are going to unfold in the Eastern Conference. If Crosby's healthy, that changes the dynamics in the Eastern Conference completely, but I don't think that he's going to come back this year. That's my opinion.
I do think he's going to come back, Ezzy, and I think you're right about the fact that it completely changes the dynamics of the Eastern Conference. Right now, the Penguins are 4 points back of Philly with four games to go, so they're not catching Philly as far as I'm concerned.
No.
They're going to lock into four,
yeah.
And it looks like at this point in time, locking into four, they're going to face Tampa Bay in the first round. Sidney Crosby completely and totally changes that series and completely and totally changes, you know, moving forward if they can beat Tampa Bay. So
look, he changes any series he plays in.
I think it is a story, Drew, and I think that the fact he's the best player in the world and really is taking it to the next level, I think it makes anything he does a story, and I don't have a problem with it. It's the stories of players who aren't as good as him that bother me all the time. You know, the Chad Johnsons, for example, in football, he's not that great.
Chad Ochocinco.
Didn't he change his name back?
I don't know.
Anyways, but...
But that's who you're talking about.
Yeah,
people probably wouldn't know who Chad Johnson is right now.
That kind of... Like, Paul Bissonnette gets all this attention. I mean, he stinks, but, like, he gets all this attention because he's a, you know, he tweets, but... Crosby's the best player in the world. I want to know where he's going. You know, you watch the highlights of him and just in practice, roofing backhands, breaking water bottles with shots that nobody can even think of making. I mean, he's unbelievable, and anything he does is a story, and I don't have a problem with it.
Really?
No problem with it.
I mean, he had resumed skating, say, about a week or two weeks ago.
That's a big step in terms of concussions.
But it's not like if you read the article, and I'm going to pull it up here, if I'm not mistaken, it says he's not getting any contact.
Right, Drew, of course. But even when he goes to quote-unquote contact, nobody's going to hit him anyways, because he's Sidney Crosby.
Yeah, I know. But I'm just
saying. And that needs to be taken into account. I mean, the truth is, guys, is when they go in to say, they say no contact in the contact drills,
yeah.
All that says is that he's fair game. Nobody's actually going to hit him. The real contact's going to come in the first game.
Of course.
And that's what I'm saying. It also just means he's going to participate in more drills,
yes,
not
exactly.
Necessarily hitting drills.
But I want to hear when he's playing.
The thought is this, guys. Will Sidney Crosby change his game when he comes back?
Well, not deliberately. If you asked him, he would say no. But are there going to be unintentional changes to his game?
That's the million-dollar question.
I mean, how many concussions is this for Sid?
One, really.
Hold on. One that you know of? I mean, there's probably, let's be honest, there's probably more than one concussion in his career at this
point
in time.
Maybe, I mean, but Drew, at the same time, he's a guy like Gretzky that really sees... Remember, the play that he got hit on, Drew.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, the hit by Hedman after was the after effect.
But you're talking about the Steckel hit initially.
It wasn't, he didn't have the puck, he wasn't aware of it. It was, you know, I didn't think it was intentional, but people do, and they thought it was cheap.
Yeah.
But he didn't have the puck. I mean, when he has the puck, he's so aware of where everybody is on the ice that he doesn't put himself
hit.
In those situations.
Yeah. I see what you're saying. When
you're hitting the corner, it's hard to get a concussion in the corner because the main part about concussions, Drew, is that you don't see the hit coming.
Right.
Because you don't brace yourself.
And I think what the answer to that question, Richie, will reveal itself when we see what Crosby does one-on-one with the puck. If he's taking guys wide, if he's cutting into the middle
is a big thing.
If he is, you talk about Gretzky. Crosby is, you know, in a sense, a lot more physical than Gretzky because Crosby actually, you know, has a certain amount of forechecking to his game, whereas Gretzky was so smart he could just take the puck from you and he didn't need to forecheck.
Yeah, Gretzky was otherwordly in terms of like his ability to see the ice. He didn't even get touched. Yeah,
he was almost a superhero on the ice. But Crosby, yeah.
He's not afraid of contact, but he's just so strong on the puck they couldn't get the puck off of him.
Who?
Crosby.
Right. Yeah. And Gretzky just like if you came close to him, who you're moving away from opened a seam and he found it.
And exactly.
You can't compare anybody to Gretzky.
No, they play. I mean, they're both unbelievable players. They just play a bit of a different game.
Crosby in the corners is similar to Peter Forsberg,
in that he doesn't shy away.
And he engages and he uses his body strength and his balance. Balance is the biggest thing, guys, you know.
Core strength.
Lifting weights and all that stuff doesn't do anything. It's just your hockey balance.
It's your core strength.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why, you know, I know it's the latest cliche, but everybody's talking about core strength. My point is, look, I want Sidney back in the game. The game needs him desperately. I just don't want to be inundated with Sidney Crosby skates a little bit harder than he did yesterday, so it's breaking news. I want to know when he's practicing to be able to play in the next game so that he's going to be on the ice and demonstrating his exquisite skills.
Well,
that's all I want.
Richie, you said that you think he's going to come back. I didn't think he was going to come back. Obviously, he's practicing to come back for the playoffs, not the regular season. He's not coming back, I imagine. But I didn't see or read anything that pointed towards him coming back. But
I think
then
he'll
be back. But then again, what do I know?
If he wasn't getting healthier, he wouldn't be practicing. I think he's coming back. I think he'll be back for the first round of the playoffs. Just a hunch, but that's my hunch. Yeah. Let's move to St. Louis, where TJ Oshie, supposedly one of the young building blocks on the St. Louis Blues, skipped practice earlier this week, unexcused.
We talking about practice.
Was suspended for 2 games by the Blues for his infraction. What does this say to you about Oshie, about his commitment, chalk it up to youth, but at some point in time, youthful indiscretion is no longer an excuse.
We should ask Richie because he partied with him at UND. So
well, that's what I was going
to
say.
He did like to party at UND. He did get in trouble at UND. I believe he urinated.
Didn't he throw a couch out a window or something?
He urinated out of the back of a bar. I forget what it was. He got arrested for it. But
I did that last night.
Except that wasn't a bar. That was your back door at your house.
That's actually your basement. Anyways, no, he's had trouble before. He's a little bit fiery, and he's trouble's found him before, or he's found trouble.
Yeah.
Either way, he slept through an alarm. So I mean, let's not go crazy here.
Do you believe that?
Maybe I don't know, Drew. I think that you need to show more maturity.
Yeah, you got to set 2 alarms.
But hey. Give him.
You make millions of dollars. You can, as somebody once paid you to wake them up. Oshie could swing.
I was actually in high demand for waking people up.
This is not a joke.
I'm a heavy sleeper, but I'm quite effective. I'm actually driving my father to the airport on Monday morning at 6. He's going to Vancouver.
That was a 4.
And he's
it was a 4 on Wednesday. So
changed.
I guess
there was a deal on Go Jets or whatever. But is that still an airline?
Jets Go.
Yeah. For the Jets, they offer a nice in-flight snack.
It's not an airline anymore. It's out of business.
Pretzels?
Pretzels.
Anyways, I'm saying if you can wake yourself up to wake other people up, why can't Oshie do it? I don't believe for 1 second that he slept through his alarm.
No, I mean,
he was up until 4 a.m. partying the night.
They didn't suspend him for... They suspended him for the games. They didn't take away his money, and he donated the money to charity.
Which is good.
So let's just see how he moves forward here. But again, Drew, you drafted him knowing these problems. I mean, if you talk to anybody at UND, you know TJ Oshie likes to party.
Yeah, I know. But at some point in time, you like to party too, but you matured and grew out of it and became a relatively responsible adult. Why can't he? And he's getting paid millions of dollars.
Fair enough.
You're only getting paid hundreds of thousands of dollars.
All right, yeah.
I'm just saying, if this is a guy that you're counting on to be the leader of your team, he has to show more than this as an example.
But is he a leader, Drew? He's a fan favorite. He plays that exuberant style, that flurry style. But is he a leader? I mean, the leaders on that team are David Backes. You know, I think he's the one leader in that team.
Doesn't matter. You're right. He might not be
Andy
a leader.
McDonald
he might
healthy.
Not be the guy that is a leader, but you're paying him a lot of money, so you expect
and
him to show up day in, day out.
I think this is, getting even more attention because Patrick Berglund did something similar earlier in the year. So, is Davis Payne?
Well, that's a fair question. Is Davis Payne the head coach losing his team? I understand, and I'm sure...
He did this to John Tortorella.
You'd hear about it.
You hear a punch in the face.
Well, and maybe
if two guys did it, he'd probably...
Maybe they need to kick
the team off the ice in the middle of a game.
Maybe they need a disciplinarian. Maybe they need somebody who's going to kick some butt there. That's all I'm saying.
The team has underachieved for 2 years now.
That's right. So at some point in time, you have to do more than just have the potential on paper.
The fact of the matter is...
Are you using Richard's quotes against him again?
You're using Richard Drops.
Richard Drops? We have to look into the ethics about using your own drops against you. That's all I'm saying. Let's go to break.
Ridiculous!
Is that me? Remus, who is that? Jim Mora?
Norm McDonald.
Norm McDonald.
Really? Great. You didn't see that one.
Norm McDonald drop. Yeah. I like it.
And apparently he confused you with...
No, he's actually in the studio.
Norm McDonald.
I don't know. Remus is on the ball. It's good.
Yeah, exactly. Let's go to break. When we come back, Mike Colligan of HockeyWriters.com is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on Sports Radio 1290. It's a life of
danger. When it's football...
He throws an alley-oop to Moss, right side! Caught! Touchdown!
The NBA...
Drives on Petras, spins in the paint, turnaround jumper's good! A new career high for Aaron Aflalo.
When it's baseball...
And Ace Walker throws a one-hit shutout here today.
It's Sports Radio 1290. All sports, all the time.
It started with a clicking jaw or headaches. But now, your pain and discomfort is so bad that you're fading. You may even have left your job. You have to visit tmjsnoring.ca because there may be help. Dr. Stephen Lawson has had high success rates in reducing pain and giving people back their lives.
Visit tmjsnoring.ca.
Dr. Lawson is a dentist who limits his practice to TMJ and sleep breathing problems.
After being cooped up all winter, there's nothing Canadians like more than getting out onto the open road come spring. And with great savings on the Garmin GPS, you'll never utter the words, "I think we're lost." Right now at Canadian Tire, the Garmin 1250 GPS is on sale for only $99.97. That's $60 off the regular price. Road trips, cottage trips, anywhere trips. Spring savings. Bring it on. See flyer for details.
Every night I lay awake and watch her sleep. She's just beautiful. The way her hair spills across the pillow, and her skin glows in the moonlight. She looks just like an angel. Too bad she doesn't sound like one.
Snoring can affect your health and your relationship. Often it can lead to sleep apnea or other serious conditions. There may be a way to help. See Dr. Stephen Lawson today.
Visit tmjsnoring.ca.
Once upon a soggy spring night, as rain rat-a-tatted, lightning leapt and branches broke, a Charleswood chap named Chuck chattered,
"What if the wind and rain break a window pane? Or the old oak tree smacks my SUV?"
To which his sensible spouse Sophie said soothingly,
"Don't be a nervous Nelly, Chucky. Everything will be just ducky. With Winnipeg Insurance, we've no need to fear. So stop fretting and come over here."
It's no fairy tale. With Winnipeg Insurance, your worries are over. Winnipeg Insurance, 2521 Portage and at the Waverly Auto Mall. The city you live in, the insurance you need.
Fix it, build it, or buy it. No matter what, you can feel right at home with an SCU mortgage. We offer builder mortgages to full benefits mortgages, all built with comfortable values you know and trust, all with flexible rate options tailored to meet your needs. So whether you're fixing, building, or buying, talk to an SCU mortgage specialist today. Steinbeck Credit Union. Taking care of the world's most important mortgage. Yours.
Really great hockey talk. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on Sports Radio 1290.
To the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 9:30 in the morning. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And you can always send us an email, drew@IllegalCurve.com. Or if you have a witty tweet to send us, at Illegal Curve is where to send it. And you never know, maybe we'll throw it on the air if it's witty enough. We'll see. Depends on how smart you are. I know it's Saturday morning. I don't like being that smart on Saturday morning, so.
Drew, didn't you have a really high GPA?
Sure. Let's go with that.
Something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah. Richie had a high GPA, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure he did. Anyways, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Let's go to the Illegal Curve Hockey Hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Mike Colligan, HockeyWriters.com, writer for Forbes magazine. Welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Happy to be here this morning.
How you doing today, Mike?
Doing well. How are you guys?
Doing very well as well.
Mike, what's the current net value of Matthew Holsizer?
It's tough to say right now. It's fluctuating, but I'm sure he'll get back to you with the details at some point in the coming months here.
Yeah, as long as, I'm glad you said months, because there's certainly no quick resolution to that question. But that's for another day in time, of course. Because, well, frankly, we're all getting sick of that story. Anyways, it's not important right now. We're here to talk about the Pittsburgh Penguins with you, Mike.
You
wrote an interesting piece on how the Penguins, sort of their success this season and their success in the free agency period last July, all began when they acquired the rights to Dan Hamhuis. Can you maybe walk our readers through what you were going for in that piece and your conclusions and what you found doing that research?
Well, it was something that just kept coming up because I was taken aback when the Penguins, last year at the NHL draft, they sent a third-round pick to the Philadelphia Flyers, if anyone remembers where Hamhuis was getting bounced around before free agency started. And the Penguins acquired his rights a couple days beforehand for a third-round pick. And 2 days later, July 1st, Hamhuis went to Vancouver, where we all expected he would go, and signed for the money we expected he would sign for. And to me, it didn't fit as a Ray Shiro acquisition. It didn't fit the mold. I couldn't figure it out, and I had a lot of people that came to me and said, why did he do that? Why did he waste the third-round pick when we all knew Hamhuis was going to Vancouver? And, when I started thinking back on the evolution of Ray Shiro and how he's developed in the last 5 years now as a general manager, I thought back to the Marian Hossa situation. And when the Penguins acquired Marian Hossa and thought that he could be a part of the core going forward and here in Pittsburgh, and they offered him quite a bit of money. They offered him an option of 5, 6, 7 years, whatever money he wanted, $7 million a season. I mean, they bent over backwards to keep him in the mix and make him happy and give him the best offer possible. And we all know that then he bolted to town on a one-year deal to Detroit. And that just happened to be 2 days into free agency when the Penguins were left with little to no options. And I think Shiro, he changed in that scenario. He learned that he can't let one player dictate his offseason plans. And I think that's where Hamhuis was using the Sergei Gonchar was kind of the Marian Hossa of last year, where Gonchar wanted a lot of money. He wanted more than maybe he was worth. And I think Shiro thought, if I can go out and find out what Hamhuis wants, I already know what Sergei Gonchar wants. He knocked those two pegs off the list, and then at 12:01 on July 1st, he went after Zdeněk Mihalik. He locked him up. He then moved on to Paul Martin and got him. So I think that's just what I've seen, is that's how Shiro has evolved, and it gave him such an advantage just to see what Hamhuis wanted on the open market.
Mike, you talk about the evolution of Ray Shiro as a general manager. You've also written about, you've quoted him many times, Jason Botterill. He is Winnipegger, actually, and he's he's become Ray Shiro's right-hand man as the assistant GM there, and I guess resident capologist. Can you speak a bit about his value to the overall management team in Pittsburgh?
Well, I think it's become more and more important to the team as they've gotten right up against the salary cap now, and teams that are budget teams, they have limitations on what they can do. The ownership budget, how much they're willing to spend, but they don't have a hard limit. So there's a little more flexibility there. Mm-hmm. You can work around it. But now that the Penguins are right up against that salary cap limit, every move is very important. And it's not just going down to the minors and calling up the best player. It's making sure that, does this guy fit with our situation? Does he fit financially? Does this make the most sense? When should we bring him up? There's just so many other variables now that I think those teams really need a financial guy, a capologist, to make sure that they're weighing all the options and making the most financially best options out there.
Mike, the Ottawa Senators recently signed Stéphane DeCosta, who's actually from France. He's one of, I think, 6 or 7 players to ever come out of France. How close were the Penguins to securing DeCosta? Because we were hearing that Pittsburgh was involved in trying to get him on their team.
They were, and the Penguins have actually gone out and acquired quite a few minor league or college free agents and thrown them into the minor leagues, and they've developed into Mark Letestu, now a top-line center, given all the injuries. He's a guy that was undrafted out of Western Michigan. And Ben Lovejoy, a top-six defenseman, he was undrafted as well. And They've got a few more coming through the system, and I think they've realized that if they're going to go out at the trade deadline and acquire these big-name players, they're going to be giving up draft picks and prospects, so they need to find them any way possible, and Acosta was one of them. He was one they were looking at, you know, among 20 other teams, it seems. They really wanted to get him. I think the financial issues were a problem, and maybe Acosta saw a little bit more opportunity in Ottawa, but the Penguins went out and got Paul Thompson, a Hobie Baker finalist, a guy that really they've had their eyes on for a while now. He's out of New Hampshire, and they actually brought him into their prospect camp last summer to skate and get used to the team, and I think kind of sell him, kind of like a college recruiting trip, to give him a taste of what the Penguins are like, and obviously that worked. They signed him to a two-year deal a couple days ago.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Mike Colligan of HockeyWriters.com and a writer for Forbes magazine. Mike, unfortunately, you can't talk about the Penguins without talking about Matt Cook. And, of course, we know that Cook is gone for the rest of the regular season in the first round of the playoffs. What is the, you know, internal team opinion of Matt Cook? How does ownership see him? I mean, ownership and the front office have been very vocal about hits to the head. They've been the most vocal organization in the NHL. How do his teammates see him? You know, is Matt Cook, you know, is he guaranteed that when he's eligible to come back that he's going to play for the Penguins?
Tough to say right now. I don't think I could give you a specific answer, and one of that reasons would be their roster situation. They've now got 19 forwards, if you're counting Sidney Crosby and a couple guys that are injured. They've got 19 forwards to deal with, so it wouldn't be tough to just say, listen, man, take the rest of the season off, and we'll address in the offseason what your future is. But this is a guy they just signed to a three-year contract. Mm-hmm. He just finished the first season, and Ray Shiro doesn't hand out more than 2 years to many players. So that they put their faith in him. They said, this is a guy we want to be a part of our core. And then, like you said, the Shiro and the ownership, especially Mary Lemieux with his statement, they've been very vocal, and just a few days after those Board of Governor meetings where Shiro was kind of the face of this concussion battle, Matt Cook does this. So it was something that I think they were embarrassed. They were made to look foolish by him, and I saw Shiro right after that game, and he had a mix between fury and just sick to his stomach, because I think he realized what this was going to mean and how it was going to make him kind of look pretty foolish in it. So I think it's something they'll address in the offseason. I think he has one more strike left, but it's going to be tough for a guy like that who makes his living being a guy on the edge of the game there and getting away with some of these dirty hits that could turn into suspension-worthy hits.
Mike, what's the... we're losing Mike there. We're losing? I think we made...
Still here, yep.
Oh, you're still there? Okay. Okay.
Getting some static.
A hurricane just blew through there, apparently.
Mike, what's the update on Sidney Crosby? And yes, the main question is, do you expect him back for Game 1 of the playoffs?
I would say yes. I think everything I've seen out of him so far and the progress he's made, I think he's on track for that. I think the team wants to temper expectations for fans. I think they want to temper expectations for Sidney himself. They don't want to get his hopes up too much just to have a setback in the coming weeks here. But they also want to temper expectations for his teammates. They don't want to have them thinking that, okay, the cavalry's coming in just a couple weeks here, and then he doesn't show up. And now what happens to the fragile psyche of a team that is really struggling to score goals right now, and I think they'd love to get him back in the lineup, obviously. So it's something they're taking it a day at a time. You never know with a concussion how you're going to react and how you're going to get from day to day, and it's something that they'll have to see what happens as they ramp up his workouts. But from everything I've seen, he looks like the old Sidney Crosby, and it's just going to take a couple weeks here. I think he'll be right in the mix in the first round.
Mike, because it looks like Sidney Crosby has a very good chance at coming back for the first round, what do you think the ceiling is for this team, and do you think there's a chance that they can usurp Philly and get back to the Stanley Cup Finals?
I think it is. I think the Eastern Conference is wide open in many ways, and you know the Penguins this year are 23-8-8 in one-goal games, and they've shown the ability to win those tight games. They play a very defensive system that relies on turnovers and transition the other way, but they've had great goaltending from Marc-Andre Fleury, so they've got a top one or two penalty kill unit in the NHL, and when you think of the recipe for champions, it's usually including goaltending, defense, and special teams. The power play is still an issue, but you get Crosby in there. I think when you get into these tight 2-1 games in the playoffs, I think Crosby, you know, he had a 25-game point streak there where he was contributing every single night. You add that to a team that's already doing pretty well, I think they can compete with anyone in the Eastern Conference.
Mike Colligan of HockeyWriters.com and Forbes Magazine, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Definitely, guys. Anytime.
Take care, Mike. Thanks very much.
That's great that we had Mike on. There's a lot of Pittsburgh Penguins fans out there. Obviously, our friend of the show, H-Bomb, will be happy to hear that Crosby's coming back. I mean, probably coming back in the first round. But you know what? I didn't think that he was coming back. We talked about this a lot about, what was it, maybe 3 weeks ago, that, you know, looked like he wasn't going to come back. It's great that Mike is confirming, and you know, Richie mentioned that he thought Crosby was going to come back. It's great, you know, it improves Pittsburgh's playoff chances, but it's just good for the sport of hockey because it's the best player in the world and everyone's going to get to enjoy him in the playoffs.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Let's go to break. When we come back, injuries around the NHL. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. It's 9:45 in the morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg, Richard Pollock, Michael Remus, and producer Tim. We just heard from Mike Colligan of HockeyWriters.com and Forbes Magazine. In case you miss any portions of the show or any of the interviews, they'll be available for download via iTunes. Just subscribe to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on iTunes, and the show will get automatically sent to you probably later on today or early tomorrow. Of course, you can also follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us. You can friend us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. Or you can always send us an email, drew@illegalcurve.com. And be sure to check out www.illegalcurve.com for our daily Drama in the Desert feature, where we recap the day's news and notes and articles and everything else from what's going on with the Phoenix Coyotes ownership saga. Fortunately, we won't be talking about that until later on in the show. But for now, let's talk about some injuries that occurred around the NHL last week. The big one...
You're going to scare people driving in the car with that.
Yeah, seriously. People just pulled over to the right-hand side.
Everybody who's driving while texting is just tripping out right now.
I'm not even joking right now. When I first heard that, I actually thought it was a fire alarm. Okay, don't play that clip.
Every single person in the city who was texting while driving just tripped out so hard.
What are you talking about? I just tripped out. I'm not in a car. I'm sitting beside you drinking a Coke.
I'm still not sure how you can drink a Coke this early in the morning.
Because I drink 3 coffees before the show starts because I get up so early.
That's nonsense. Not one word of what you just said was true.
What do you mean? What's wrong with it?
You had 3 coffees this morning?
Yeah, one at home and 2 here.
Yeah.
Really?
And then we had that sample at Starbucks, too.
I had your sample at Starbucks.
Well, that's true. That's what I meant. We, 2 of us.
Are you guys conjoined twins now?
Drew, move on.
Andy Kopitar.
If I was going to be a conjoined twin with anyone, it would probably be Richard.
That's sweet. Drew, we wouldn't pick you.
I wouldn't want to be picked by you two. I can't stand being with you for 3 hours in the studio. Never mind being attached to you physically.
Drew, next topic, please.
Just emotionally, it's hard enough.
Drew, please move on.
Can I have a hug? Andy Kopitar. He's out for the season. What does that do? He sprained his ankle.
Well, that changes everything.
He tore ligaments. It's ironic. Maybe not ironic, but it's interesting that had it been a clean break... You know, a clean break of the ankle, he would be back sooner than the fact that it's just a high ankle sprain with severe ligament damage. What does this do for the Los Angeles Kings and their playoff hopes? And as the Stanley Cup Western Conference representative.
It crushes them.
Yep, it crushes them. There's nothing else to say. It means they're number one center. He's turned into a nice two-way player. He drives the bus in L.A. I mean, he drives the bus. I mean, up the middle, they have Hanzus and guys like Stoll and Hanzus and guys that can't offensively drive the bus. They specialize in certain aspects of the game. They can do face-offs. They can play the point, you know, in Stoll. Hanzus can play a solid two-way game, but he's more defensive than offensive. You lose your best player, Drew, on a team that's not that offensively deep. And so then what happens is you rely on your defense a little bit more than your goaltending, and I'm not convinced that Jonathan Quick might be the answer there. And then you get into an issue of, okay, you lose Kopitar. Can you win? They were not the high-scoring team before, but can you win the 2-1, 3-2 games? And that what that means is, can Jonathan Quick make the big saves, and can he keep you down to two or three goals, you know, two goals a game? And you need to play with the lead generally. This changes it. Before, I thought they were as tough and out as you were going to find in the Western Conference. Now I think they're likely to be the underdog in the first round and probably likely to lose. They're not going to be an easy out, but they're likely to lose.
2 weeks in a row now. 2 weeks ago, they lost Justin Williams.
You know, that's a big, but it's not close to as significant.
No. And then this week, they lose Enzi Kopitar. I mean, who's next? I mean, Dustin Penner? I mean...
Doesn't matter now, Drew. I mean, that's your best player, your number one center. I mean, take your number one center of every team. Take Henrik Steen off the Canucks.
It's a huge loss.
Jonathan Toews off the Hawks. Take Pavel Datsyuk off the Wings. I mean, think about the significance of all those, and then that's Kopitar. It's the same thing.
Yeah, and the thing that's the most unfortunate about this is that Kopitar has played a lot better in the second half of the season than in the first half.
Yep.
And, you know, what he means to that first line,
They drive the bus below the goal line.
Yeah, he's able to hold on to the puck. He's very, I mean, like you said, he plays in basically all situations. He's not their top penalty killer, but he can go out there and penalty kill if he needs to. But power play and his time on the ice, and the LA Kings, right, have not scored a lot of goals this year. They're a good defensive team.
Very good.
But when you, I mean, I'm going to talk about this a little bit later in Six Things We Learned This Week. I think they match up the best against Phoenix.
I agree.
It'll still be
the two weakest Western Conference teams.
Yep, and it'll still be, which is weird because they're 4-5, but it'll still be difficult for them to beat Phoenix because Phoenix is also a very good defensive team.
I mean, he leads the team in finding the two leading scorers, Williams and Kopitar. So now their leading scorers, Dustin Brown and Ryan Smith and Jarrett Stoll. And Jarrett Stoll, you're going to the playoffs, and Jarrett Stoll and Michael Hanzus are your
offensive juggernaut?
Our third and fourth in scoring, guys. I mean, where are you going to get the offense from? That's what I want to know. Where is the offense coming from? I just don't see where it comes from. And that's going to be a problem for them. Yeah, I mean, if you're going to lose one guy off the team, you could even probably, losing Doughty might and not have as much of an effect because of their defensive depth, although that's arguable, as Kopitar. But that's about as bad as an injury loss as you're going to have. Kopitar plays, as you mentioned, Kopitar plays 2 minutes on the shorthanded per game. So he is one of their primary penalty killers. You know, Hanzus is a guy that's leaned on, obviously, their defenseman. But Kopitar is leaned on in every situation. He plays significant penalty kill minutes. He plays significant power play minutes. He plays 22 minutes a game total, almost. That is the most for a forward on the team. To replace those minutes, Drew, you can't.
Jordan Leopold is out indefinitely in Buffalo. I believe he broke his thumb. Is that what happened? Was that a breaking bone audio? Oh, that's awful. Don't use that. Broken left hand. Sorry, not thumb. Broken left hand. That's terrible. Jordan Leopold, Ezzy, you spoke about him last week in your three things about how key he's been for the Sabres. And another guy is out probably... Well, I mean, you know, maybe they get him back for the second round if they get there, but that's a maybe.
Looks like he's out for 4 weeks from now. And, yeah, he was injured last Friday night, I believe.
Yeah.
And Buffalo now, Ryan Miller is having injury problems. I think it's his chest. He took a shot.
Took a
up
shot
his
from Fanoff, I think it was.
And the thing is, it's not but looking it's good for shot. Him. So yeah. Leopold is out, and he was their best offensive defenseman. He was also having a really good bounce-back year. You know, Buffalo, they've got a lot of, you know, veteran guys, and they've got some, you know, obviously some talented guys like Sequeira and Myers and on forward. But again, when you get to the playoffs and you're playing Philadelphia and you don't have Jordan Leopold,
that's right. Yeah.
That's huge.
Right. Yeah.
So, I mean, they can't afford to lose a guy like that.
You're talking about your leading time on ice per game defenseman. A guy I questioned their signing of him to a 3-year, $9 million deal. You know, mainly because of the fact that he's just not a reliable enough defenseman in terms of injuries. He's played 71 games this year, so, you know.
He had concussion issues a few years back.
And he's been injury-prone, and prove me wrong in that respect. You lose 3 minutes on the power play, you lose 2.5 minutes on the penalty kill, and you lose about 18 minutes at even strength. He's playing more than Tyler Myers. He's a terrific skater. He's a good puck mover. He transitions well. I mean, what you do, again, this is what happens, guys. You lose Leopold. What happens? Guys like Steve Monitor and Andre Sekera have to move over and become two and three defensemen.
That's not a recipe for success.
When everybody moves up the depth chart, this team cannot. I don't think this team could have won. You know, likely probably would have trouble with their defense anyways with Leopold there. Without Leopold, this team will get dominated with a lack of ability to get the puck out of their own zone and pinned in their own zone because of their lack of defensive depth. This injury is huge. This team is likely going to be in the playoffs. Who they get matched up against, that could still be determined. But it's going to be a tough battle, and uphill battle for them moving forward.
Moving to Washington, where Caps' recent acquisition, Dennis Weidman, was hospitalized with a leg contusion, which is really just a fancy way of saying a bruise.
Must be a big bruise.
Apparently, they have to drain it and get the blood out of it. Apparently, he was sending his teammates pictures of it and grossing them out by it. Like he was.
I'm a joke maker.
You know, he would take pictures of that and send it to his teammates. That's just he'll recover, but that's just it's got to be a hard, he blocked a hard shot to get a leg contusion of that variety.
You know what? They need him.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Mike Green's out. I mean, they don't have
not experiencing concussion symptoms anymore, but their team, I think, is actually a quietly dangerous team, but they need to be healthy.
I think they're very quietly dangerous. They're in second place. I mean, they're a point behind Philadelphia. Nobody's talking about them.
You know what?
They just need to be healthy on defense. And it's the same sort of situation like they had in Buffalo. If they lose any, first of all, I think they might have defensemen playing, you know, one slot higher than they should anyways.
Ooh.
I'm saying Washington. I'm saying,
I don't mind their 1-6. I don't mind it.
Okay, well, I mean,
they have a good seventh defenseman now. They have a good depth.
Well, but if you lose any of that depth, then I think you got guys playing way out of position than where they should slot into
as a
1-7 defense.
And as much as it seems odd to say, their offense is going to be
Well, of course.
And their goaltending, there's a lot of question marks, but a lot of possible answers.
What?
I mean, it's an interesting.
You have 101 points, so they must be doing something right.
I realize that, Drew, but it's different.
I know it's always different come playoff time, but they're a team that is.
Again, you have three goalies who contribute value. In the playoffs, only one can contribute value if you're going to be doing anything.
And guys, I think if Pittsburgh ends up playing Tampa, that'll be a good first-round matchup. But if it's Rangers-Washington, that is going to be an epic.
Yeah, that's not a good matchup for them to
make. Epic battle.
No. We talked about it, I know. The final injury we're going to touch on this week, Dan Hamhuis of the Canucks suffered another concussion.
Yeah, that's a really worrisome one. They
especially
Matthew Sakaris, who's been on the show many times, you know, quoted actually Hamhuis from comments he made after his third concussion
when he was considering
earlier this year, and now he's got another one. This is a nifty one. And again, you know, when you're talking about matching up guys against top offensive right now, Vancouver's lined up to play Chicago.
Yeah.
Who do you want up against Taves, Kane, and Sharp? You want Hamhuis?
Well, we'll talk about that issue because I've been vindicated. We'll talk about that issue later on in the show because Eric DeHatchick is
Drew, you're on your
I've been vindicated.
Drew and your
you say frequently
ideas.
That you're one of your favorite writers is Eric DeHatchick.
I always agree with him.
I know, but you know, if I'm saying it and Eric says it, we're two of your favorite people, so that means you should agree with us.
It's a little bit of grandstanding that you're doing right now.
I'm going to do some more grandstanding later on.
It's a lot of grandstanding.
But don't worry, there will be more grandstanding later on, so just stay
tuned
for that.
Some fancy grandstanding.
Well, let's go to break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about some of the playoff races. Maybe we'll open up the phone lines, take some calls while we have a couple minutes. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Top of the hour to you. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 1 hour down, 2 hours to go. In case you missed the first hour, we heard from Mike Colligan of HockeyWriters.com and Forbes Magazine. Still to come in this hour, James Gordon of the Ottawa Citizen. James Myrtle of the Globe and Mail at the top of next hour, and at 11:30 this morning, Chip Alexander from the Rally News and Observer. 780-1290, area code 204-780-1290. We'll take some calls now if you want to talk about anything hockey-related. You can always follow us on Twitter, @IllegalCurve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And you can always check out the website at www.IllegalCurve.com. Guys, the Vancouver Canucks have clinched the President's Trophy. They have nothing left to play for this season. How much rest do you think they should give to their big guns the rest of this last week of the regular season?
It's an interesting one, Drew, but especially because Luongo's generally been the guy, you know, carrying the load for the most part in net throughout the year. Now, Corey Schneider's played a significant amount of games.
Yeah, Luongo's only played about 55, 56 games.
So when you get that, you don't really need to rest your goalie. In terms of your forwards, well, I think you do need to rest some of those centers because they're going to be logging a lot of minutes and a lot of tough minutes now that Manny Mahotra's out. I would rest guys. I mean, you have nothing to play for. I would pick and choose games to rest guys. I don't have an issue with that at all.
You know, the question of rest, Richie, it's almost like Vancouver should be resting guys in game as opposed to giving the guy the night off unless they need it.
I actually think that's a great idea. Yeah. Because
I don't think you can give guys really the night off completely and totally because the call-up rules are so restrictive and everything else. There's only so many guys on their roster. Like you can't sit guys for that. Yeah. You can't tell guys that you can have three nights off or something. You don't
last
have
week depth. I said I have an issue with Ovechkin taking 10 days off. That's different than missing a game with four games left.
Yeah.
One game. But I like Jesse's idea.
Yeah, reduce his minutes. Because you're going to...
14, 15 minutes.
And like Richie said, a guy like Ryan Kesler, okay? I mean, the Sedins have gotten a lot of the attention, but in my opinion, Ryan Kesler has been the real MVP of that team because of the situations he plays
in. That's fair.
Because of, you add that penalty killing, all of a sudden, you and Vancouver will eventually go into overtime. Reduce Kessler's minutes a little bit. Give Yannick Hansen a little bit more minutes, knowing that Kessler is going to be playing more if they go to overtime in the playoffs, for example. So I think that's a better idea. And, I mean, Ovechkin is back now, but when you're thinking about, the flow of a season and all that, the Canucks have been in a great flow the entire season. I agree with Richie in that if you let a guy, have more than, a couple of games off, that might screw up his flow and the rhythm he was in. So
I don't think you give. I like your idea. I think I'm on board with what you guys were suggesting about giving guys just reduce their minutes. Keep them in the flow, keep their brains where on the ice and in the game where they should be, but let them sort of take a step back, see the game more as opposed to being actively involved in the game. And like you said, these games are meaningless to them.
I think Yezzy's exactly right there.
Another clip of Richard. I don't get it. I don't get it. At all. Let's talk about Vancouver's matchup right now, because we spoke about it before the break, and I'm going to gladly take on a little bit of gloating, because rare is the day where I am correct.
It's funny, Drew.
Rare is right, Drew.
The Canucks are going to finish with, 115 points or something?
Yeah, sure.
Something like that. And then they're going to end up playing the Stanley Cup champion Chicago, defending Stanley Cup champion Chicago Blackhawks in the first round.
Or they're going to play the Anaheim Ducks and the greatest line in hockey right now.
I know. Wow.
How is that the least bit equitable? How is that justifiable?
And I know...
And, I mean...
Go ahead.
Eric DeHatchick.
There you go.
Good friend
this
of the show.
This is the guy, Richie,
I was unaware. I didn't know that Eric has been harping on this issue and talking about this issue for a lot of years now. Yeah. James Myrtle mentioned that to us on Twitter yesterday. Totally agree with Eric, and I'm not going to, for a second, take credit for it, but it was on this show, and I believe Remus might have the audio. I was jeered,
Remus, do you have the audio? All right, let's hear it.
Okay, let's hear the audio.
You'll hear
grandstanding.
For finishing first in your conference, you should get the reward of picking the team you play in the first round. You guys criticize me.
Why should Vancouver have to play a defending Stanley Cup champion Chicago Blackhawks?
Drew, I think you recorded that yesterday.
I did not record that yesterday.
That was recorded this morning before the show. Remus, do you have our responses to that stupid idea?
It's not a stupid idea.
You have it? Let's hear.
Don't agree with that. Not only did I get gears from you guys, not only did you guys both criticize me, I can take your criticisms. We had fans calling in to criticize me.
Yeah, you got some hateful fan mail.
I got a lot of hateful fan mail. Letter bombs. I thought the letter bomb was a little unnecessary.
Anthrax.
Anthrax. Very unnecessary.
But it wasn't actually the anthrax poison. It was the CD anthrax.
Is that a bad?
That was awkward.
That was good.
I was waiting. Richie wasn't laughing. It's like Richie usually laughs at my corny jokes.
Is that like a band or something?
Anthrax, yeah. Great metal band, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not that up to date on my metal music.
Very good. I like Anthrax.
Oh, okay.
A lot.
Well, anyway, so you guys are... I'm getting the gears from you guys. I got our fans calling in at 780-1290 saying that I'm more of a jerk than I normally am. And I feel justified and vindicated because... apparently, and unbeknownst to me, Eric DeHatchick has been saying the same thing for years now. So, kudos to me. Can I have a round of applause for me? Do we have any audio of a round of applause for me?
I'm not giving you a round of applause.
Wasn't cute very well.
Remus, don't give him a round of applause.
Thank you, Remus. I appreciate that. Round of applause to you,
Remus. I would have preferred the slow clap from Not Another Teen Movie.
You can't just start a slow clap in studio, Drew.
Yeah, Drew, you can't start a slow cap.
A slow cap?
Slow clap.
Is that like a hard cap, but a slow
cap? Soft cap, slow cap.
Okay. Anyways, let's move on to, we get together.
Bruce, put down the mirror and move to the next topic, please.
That's what I'm doing. I'm getting moving on. I've applauded myself. Now I'm moving on. Every Wednesday we get together to prepare the show, have a couple beverages. It's a good time. Wednesday night.
Why is it painful every week? It just gets painful more and more.
I hate my life.
Yeah, it gets more and more painful every week.
Wednesday night.
Oh, Wednesday again?
Wednesday night we were sitting around watching the Flames Ducks game. Huge game. Flames are down 2-1. Scramble in front of the net.
Yeah.
Puck seems to go in the net. All four of us said there. We all said it was a goal.
Yep.
The overhead camera seemed to indicate it was a goal for the Flames to tie the game. NHL head office said differently. Said no goal, Flames go on to lose that game.
Will you guys allow me to rant here for a second?
By all means.
Okay, after that goal happened, they were talking about on TSN. The reason why this bothered me so much was because of what was at stake for the Calgary Flames. And remember what happened with Marty Jelena in the 2004 playoffs with the disallowed goal that turned out when they reviewed it further, it turned out
that they would have reviewed it.
You mean
that
it
was the problem?
That's right.
Oh,
mean,
yeah,
it would have been
right, Richie.
It would have been their cup winner.
Right.
And in game
they,
six
and they,
overtime.
And right,
I was
they
there.
They didn't review it. They didn't review it. But then when they did review it afterwards,
they showed it afterwards. It
showed that it should have been a goal.
That's right.
But it was very clear to all of us. So if it was very clear to four people, I mean, just taking basic numbers here. I mean, going by basic numbers. Most people probably thought it was a goal. I mean, you could probably say like a high percentage, like 80% of fans watching that game or whatever thought it was a goal. And then when they were analyzing it on TSN, this word inconclusive comes up or whatever. But
it looked pretty conclusive to me.
Exactly. As far as I'm concerned, when there's that much at stake, but not only that, the call should be consistent whether it's game one or game 77. But the video review process has to be changed so that stuff like that stuff just can't happen anymore.
Well, I just don't know what a goal is anymore. I mean, you know, how much clearer do they need? The goalie is lying in the net. The puck was, I mean, they highlighted the puck for all intents and purposes, zoomed in on it. They have the technology and the cameras, and it showed the puck behind the goal line lying on top of the goalie. To me, that's a goal. That's a clear-cut goal.
Andrew, you know they want to be in Toronto when they're reviewing these goals, and they review these goals. They have, you know, we've all seen the War Room.
Yeah.
Chris King and all those guys, they do a great job. But someone...
I don't know about that.
Well, in this case, they didn't. They usually do. I mean, they do a respectable job, let's put it that way. And, you know...
Do you think they're overthinking things?
Yes.
Do you think they're just like looking for reasons to say to justify the official's call on the ice?
I always wondered, Drew, why there's not a camera inputted in top at the top of the crossbar,
like right underneath,
yeah,
so it's
like
dead on the line.
Exactly.
Because the camera that hangs
way
up in the ceiling is a little off.
Literally,
filter.
It's inside the crossbar.
Yeah. Well, they can do it. I'm sure they have the technology.
Make one that's so small, but it's along the entire top of the crossbar.
Yeah.
And protected.
Yeah.
What about that?
Yeah, they should
do that.
You know,
put some money into this and make it an easier process to understand if it's a goal or not a goal. I think these overhead cameras, you're exactly right, Drew. I mean, they can really zoom in close, but they can't get a great view. Now, the crossbar very well might be blocked sometimes by players, but then you go to the overhead view. You have a closer angle than the one that you used the other day. I think, I've been saying that for a while, I think the NHL should put something into the crossbar.
But this
Serenity now!
This talk of having sensors in every puck is ridiculous. There's no need for that.
Why not?
If you with Richie's idea, that all you have to do is have a camera there, and then it sees where the puck is.
But if they're going
to
spend money, they might as well spend money. Get it right 100% of the time. I mean, if that camera will get it right 99% of the time, and then the sensors will get it right, make it 100% of the time, do both. Get it right. It's not difficult. You have the technology. It was a goal. I thought it was a goal. You all thought it was a goal. I don't know what head off. I don't know what the war room
either season. So it's really an important issue as far as I'm concerned.
I have no idea what the war room in Toronto saw there that said that wasn't a goal. Goalie lying in the net behind the goal line. Puck lying on top of goalie.
It may have cost Calgary the season. You know, other moves such as Daryl Sutter continuing as GM up till the middle of the season
of
also cost them that.
You can own, but you can't. Yeah. I mean, I just don't know what they were looking for. I think they were trying to find a reason to not call it a goal, and I don't know what their justification was for finding that reason. It looked pretty clear-cut to me.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I'm saying. It looked pretty clear-cut to me. Let's quickly go to the Eastern Conference race. You know, Buffalo, you know, for the longest time this year, Buffalo was fighting with Carolina for the final playoff spot. Lo and behold, you can put the Rangers back in there. Buffalo has leapfrogged the Rangers into seventh, you know. What's wrong with the Rangers? They've had two bad losses in a row now.
No, the Rangers have been, they've come up on hard times, Drew. I haven't changed my tune on them, though. I don't think anything changes there. But they have struggled. They've struggled to put the puck in the net. Their strength is you know, is that defense and that goaltending. And they need to get some, you know, they need to be consistent. But they've struggled lately, but I'm not overreacting to that at all. They've lost two games in a row. They've still been very good in their past 10 games. Overall, big picture, they score a lot more than they let in, and they have a very good top defensive combo of Girardi and Staal. And they're struggling, but they're three games up on Carolina. Now, they do give up a game there.
Yep.
So if Carolina were to win that, it'd be close. But Buffalo's also tied with the Rangers. The Rangers can, and to be honest with you, out of the three teams there, Montreal, Buffalo, and the Rangers, I'm more concerned with Montreal than I am with the Rangers.
Well, Montreal looks like they might be another sweep and out, or
Montreal,
like they were last
Montreal
year.
Better hope to God that they don't face Philadelphia in the first round, because they'll be out in 4 or 5. If they face any other team, Washington, they probably lose to. Right now, they're slotted against Boston. Boston's a good team, but there's a Montreal-Boston.
Boston will destroy them.
Maybe, Drew. But again, I have an issue with Boston's defense in terms of moving the puck. You love the play for Cabrera. I didn't love it. Like you did, I was actually against it. You loved it. You loved it. Anyways, but that defense, I think, has a little bit of trouble moving the puck out of their own zone. The Montreal speed could cause issues for them. That's the best chance, I think. I don't think they can beat Washington. I don't think they can beat Philadelphia. And they're not going to get into the 5 or 4 slot. So Montreal better start winning because they should be wanting to play Boston in the first round.
If Carolina beats the Islanders tonight, the Rangers are off today. They have an off day. If Carolina beats the Islanders today, they're 1 point behind the Rangers. They're all on even playing field in terms of the games played. New York's final four games at Philadelphia, home to Boston on a back-to-back, home to Atlanta, and home to New Jersey.
Rangers get in.
Okay.
Remember, Carolina plays Buffalo. That's a big thing right there.
You win two out of those
four
games.
If it's not a three-point game, I think that one of those teams is going to be in trouble.
Okay.
Likely Carolina.
We'll see.
We'll ask Chip Alexander in the third hour.
There you go. Let's go to break. When we come back, 6 things we learned this week. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. In the morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Before we get to 6 things we learned this week, my name is Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg.
Hey, Drew.
Hey, Richard. That was sort of stepping all over me there. Didn't really expect you to say that there.
Oh, hi.
Yeah, I guess. Still to come on the program, next segment, James Gordon of the Ottawa Citizen. James Myrtle of the Globe and Mail is going to join us at the top of next hour. And Chip Alexander from the Rally News and Observer is going to join us at 11:30.
You forgot about Matthew Hulsizer.
Yeah, that was your funny April Fool's joke.
Yeah, yesterday. Everybody fell for that, too.
Yeah, lots of people fell for that. We were having a riveting debate earlier this morning. I say that 12 noon is the cutoff for April Fool's jokes on April 1st. Tim says 2 o'clock.
No.
There's no cutoff.
So you're saying that on April 1st at 11:30 at night, you can make an April Fool's joke?
Okay, absolutely. Okay, first off, I think that someone tweeted this yesterday. The whole noon cutoff thing is for when you're in, like, school and teachers want to make sure that you're not hyper in the afternoon and horsing around.
What are you talking about right now?
If you can find me anywhere, there's this written 12 o'clock cutoff rule on April Fool's Day, Drew, that isn't on Wikipedia, then, you know, maybe you have a point there. But as far as I'm concerned, it could be 11:55 and you can put itching powder in someone's jockstrap. It's fair game. Let's move on.
Are you sure you want to move on? Because you seem to be getting passionate about that.
Where's this cutoff thing? This is like an urban myth that there's this cutoff. Let's get those guys on Discovery Network to get on this.
For any of our listeners, if you want to tweet us at Illegal Curve with your opinion on the April Fool's joke, you know, we'll see what the public has to say. We'll take it to the streets.
Public never lies. And I think, Drew, as far as me and you go, the public is in my court.
You think the public's in your court?
I think I've got the public on my side.
You got the public on your side, Ezzy.
I don't think so. only because you appeal to the lowest common denominator.
That's a low blow, Drew.
That's an LB. Low blow right there.
LB.
Let's go to 6 things we learned this week.
Six things we learned this week.
Commence countdown. 6.
Ezra Ginsberg, the loss of Ryan Miller will make it challenging for the Sabres to comfortably make the playoffs, and if he doesn't return, nearly impossible for them to beat either the Philly Flyers or Washington Capitals in the first round.
We were just talking about this. The Rangers are going to get in. The Sabres will probably get in. The Hurricanes can still get in, but the Sabres could have probably gone in more comfortably, but without Jordan Leopold, and even with Jordan Leopold, it was going to be very difficult because the Sabres, even though they have offensive defensemen, their forwards have been inconsistent and have gotten better. But now that Ryan Miller is not injured, it's going to be very tough for them to beat either Washington or Philly. I think they're going to struggle to score goals against both of those teams, and I just don't see them getting out of the first round.
5.
Phil Kessel has a total of 29 goals and 31 assists, which is 60 points in 78 games. That is a .77 points per game average. His career points per game is .82. People overreacted to his struggles.
It's not his career points per game. It's his points per game of the past 2 seasons. You know, Boston, Toronto, .82. That's what he is. I mean, Phil Kessel is going to get you 30 to 35 goals, 60, 65 points, maybe 70 in a really good year. And yet every time, you know, he goes through an 7, 8, or 9 game, period without scoring. Oh, Phil Kessel's a bust. He's a streak, you know, he scores goals. Goal scorers are on streaks. They're streaky. That's what happens. Phil Kessel hasn't really produced, Drew, anything other than what people should have expected from Phil Kessel. And that's what my issue is. You know, you trade the draft picks, blah, blah, blah. That's already gone. What's Phil Kessel giving you? Phil Kessel's giving you basically what you thought Phil Kessel was going to give you, or what you should have thought Phil Kessel was going to give you. So his season has been fairly predictable. He's been fine.
Okay. Four. The Calgary Flames lack scoring on their second line and third line and rely too heavily on Jarome Iginla and whoever he is playing with.
The Flames have actually scored, you know, their offense has been all right this year. Olli Jokinen's been a little bit better than I expected. But, you know, Matt Stage and Nicholas Hagman, Kotalik spent most of the year in the minors. But Iggy, whoever he plays with, is always the top line. I mean,
yesterday, Lankow and Tanguay.
Lankow was back for his first game of the season.
Let's talk about Lankow returning. Isn't that amazing?
It really is amazing. And he actually, you know, I think he had one assist yesterday. He didn't look that bad for a guy that,
Richie,
you know,
you're smirking.
For a guy that, you know, hasn't played this year. But Jarome Iginla is pretty much all they've got there along with Alex Tanguay. And they've clicked. You know, Tanguay got his 20th last year. Iggy's going to probably get 40. But the Calgary Flames haven't had three good lines like you would see in, you know, Vancouver or Detroit in a really long time. They don't have enough offense from their defense. And going ahead, it's going to be very difficult for this team to score a lot of goals, especially if Tanguay leaves in free agency.
Well, they don't have any long-term...
Very subtle there, Richie. Three. Richard, Scott Gomez has turned into a completely useless player.
He's useless. I mean, it's unbelievable. This is a guy that was dominant in New Jersey. He was pretty bad in New York. I thought he had more left in the tank. But he's a pass-first player. He used to be able to at least score, you know, at least 15, 20 goals. Now he can hardly shoot the puck. His wrist shots are softer than any I've seen in the league before. He used to be an amazing threat in terms of taking the puck through the neutral zone. Even now, he's hit and miss in that regard. He doesn't look to shoot. A shot is something you can improve upon. I fault him for not improving that shot. It's actually awful. He's not a threat to shoot. His passing has become predictable, and he's become the most overpaid player in the league if he hasn't been for a while, but he's just awful. I mean, I can't believe how bad he is.
Two. The Phoenix Coyotes have been a successful, hardworking team, yet they can bore you to death with their defensive style of play. They're going to struggle to go far in the playoffs against a team like the Los Angeles Kings, who are also excellent defensively.
I think Phoenix, right now, Phoenix matches up against LA. I think that series goes to 7 games for sure. That's my opinion. Maybe you guys would argue with me. But I think that Phoenix doesn't match up well against LA, who's also a good defensive team. Doesn't give up a lot of goals and a lot of chances. They're obviously going to miss Kopitar and Williams. But Phoenix is the type of team, they can score goals. It's not like they don't score goals, but they score by committee and they rely on a very tight checking kind of system. Dave Tippett is very kind of militaristic in the way he likes for his team to play. And, you know, the guys like Eric Bélanger, Shane Doan, they have a lot of veteran guys, Ray Whitney. They can score, but they're going to try to get the lead, play with the lead. And, you know, we talked about Phoenix losing last night, losing that point, but I mean, I don't think Phoenix is another thing. This is just my opinion. I think Phoenix has been a very good regular season team this year and last year, but I don't think if they match up against LA, they're going to beat them. That's my opinion.
I think everybody in the city probably is hoping that Phoenix whimpers out in the playoffs as quickly as humanly possible. That's really what everybody's
waiting
for.
So we have an end to the drama in the desert.
Exactly. The Anaheim Ducks defense has sure turned things around since the beginning of the season. It's now a solid top 4.
You looked at their defense at the beginning of the season, Drew. You didn't know what you were going to get from Cam Fowler. Tony Ludeman was having balance issues with concussion problems, I believe, or vertigo.
Like inner ear balance.
Yeah, and Francois Beauchemin was on the Leafs. Look at their team now. Lubomir Vasilevskiy has been tearing it up offensively. Logs over 4 minutes a game on the power play. Cam Fowler has growing pains, but he's a terrific puck mover, a good skater, scored some big goals. Tony Ludeman is a shutdown defenseman, underrated as far as I'm concerned. Francois Beauchemin can give you a little bit of both. That's your top four now. Heck of a lot better than it was at the beginning of the season. And you combine that top four with, if he does regain his form, Jonas Hiller. And then that top line we've talked about. And then Timo Solani. Who wants to play this team in the first round?
Nobody.
Nobody.
I mean, they're going to be... they could be...
Who wants to play him?
I was talking to Ari Baum-Cohen, resident gambling expert here, and he actually hasn't gotten back to me. But I said to Ari, you know, find out for me, what do the Ducks pay, you know, to make the play, what do the Ducks pay to make the Western Conference Finals or to win the Western Conference or, you know, even the Cup Final, sort of on a long-range futures bet? Because right now, it's definitely not a team you want to play in.
Nope.
You know, once the playoffs start, that first line, they can win you a series on your own. Jonas Hiller can steal you a series, and before you know it, you know, I'll tell you what, if I'm Vancouver, I'm not happy.
Nope.
No, it's just that simple. If I'm Vancouver, I'm not that happy. That's it for Six Things this week. Of course, you can, if you missed any of them, they're available on Twitter, at Illegal Curve.
Yeah.
And you can always, of course, download any version of the show that you may have missed at through iTunes at Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Just search for that. When we come back after this commercial break, James Gordon of the Ottawa Citizen. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290.